All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire Football Podcast. Week one recap. It's nice to hear. Nice to say. You know who it is. Matt Kennerly. I'm Jeremy Moss. Matt, you apparently were gluttonous for football and watched them all. Congratulations.
Well, all except San Jose State, but that was only because they weren't actually on television this
past
week.
Hey, that's not your fault.
And I wouldn't say it was a glutton for punishment, you know?
I didn't say punishment. I said you're gluttonous.
Pretty good week all around.
I didn't say... gluttonous can... I get it. A lot. You know what I mean? I wasn't going with the negative term gluttonous.
No, I get what you're saying.
But I give a high five to whoever decided to put condensed games on YouTube because I was out of... wasn't able to watch consistently all weekend, so I blasted through a ton. Got my Hulu Live preview to watch the Wake Forest Utah State game. So close. But not close enough.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Should we just start? Because we're going to blast these games. Because this is a touch lighter than normal, so apologize for that. But it'll give you a nice surprise on Monday night or Tuesday morning, right?
Yeah, something for the commute.
So here's what we do. We're going to go through every game. If you're new to the podcast, first off, thank you. Website, MWR.com. Go rate, subscribe, all that fun stuff. iTunes, Apple Podcast. Wherever you get your podcast, go give us a good rating. And say, hey, these guys usually know what they're talking about. Usually, right?
For the most part.
So let's start game one. San Jose State hosts Northern Colorado. They got their first win after 11 straight losses. 35-18. No real surprise. All we're going to say about this game, at least I'm going to say, from reading what happened and kind of a couple highlights were on Twitter, though. We did get to see those. The offense came to play. I think Josh Love did a fine job. A couple TDs. The defense, let's see if I get his name right because I'm probably going to butcher it. Ethan Aguayo.
Nailed it.
20 tackles.
Plus a sack, plus two TFLs. He had a pretty good Thursday night.
So you had that. You had Josh Love have, like I said, a couple of TDs. Running game, a little bit to desired, but it was branched out between three different guys. So overall, they did what they had to do, and their defense looked fine.
The big takeaway was I felt like somebody read my preview.
Oh, there you go.
and that mostly comes down to the fact that it seemed like, especially early in that game, a lot with the pass. And Taylor was a guy I pointed at in our preview podcast and said, if San Jose State wants to get off to faster starts this year, it has to start at the quarterback position. And even though he finished 21 of 31, 224 yards, two touchdowns, he completed his first eight passes.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 18 for his first 21, which did a lot to really help the Spartans build a lead that Northern Colorado never really challenged. And that's exactly the kind of offense that I think this team wants to be. It's the exact same kind of offense we saw flashes of last year. So, you know, getting 2019 off to a strong start with a strong passing game should be a really encouraging sign for Spartans fans.
Well, it should be. Then you had, like I mentioned, Tyler Nevins had a pretty good time running the ball. Dejon Packer, even Nick Nash, that's a great name. Freshman quarterback. Yes. Didn't throw the ball, but had a couple of runs there. But they did fine. Like, I think the worst case scenario was them like squeaking out a win or even losing. But from what you said you wanted to see and what we wanted to see, throw the ball first. Because Love is, I'm going to do my quarterback rankings for the first time in a while. He might be higher than we thought because you're a bit more higher on them than me. Still TBD a touch for me because, again, it's Northern Colorado. They should win that game. I want to see some improvement next time when they're playing FBS opponents, when they're – like they got Tulsa this weekend. Like I did my quick week two early lines, like a touchdown road or home dog. And so it's like we'll see. That – we'll get to that preview, but Tulsa, just so you know, Matt, had zero offense against Michigan State.
Yeah, that's not a surprise.
I'm just saying. So we'll get to that.
I think we should give some credit to the Spartans' defense, too, mm-hmm. because you know, it wasn't as though Northern Colorado had no playmakers whatsoever, but they did hold their running back, Milo Hall, to under 4 yards of carry on 20 attempts, and they held their quarterback, Jacob Knipp, to just 26 of 44 for 177 yards, plus a couple picks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had 9 tackles for loss as a team. They had 4 sacks as a team. And, you know, that's another one of those big things where, you know, we saw them do that intermittently last year. But this is a really strong start, especially, you know, among that front 7, which I think is really going to have to lead the way. And those linebackers in particular, not only Aguayo, but Jesse Osuna, who also had a sack and 2 TFLs. Tyson Parker had a sack and a TFL. It was a big night for that unit in particular. And I think if they want to meet their ceiling this year, it's going to start there, and you're probably going to see a lot more of that throughout the fall.
And my final note, 10 wide receivers caught a pass, 10.
It's not bad.
And then you had Billy Gaither, who we thought might be the leading guy, or Bailey Gaither, excuse me, two catches, which, whatever, they're rotating guys in or out, but getting that many guys involved, that's always a positive thing. So,
exactly.
Congrats, Barnes. Next game, let's go. I'm using ESPN, so we're going in order from there. So it's Utah State, Wake Forest. 38, Wake Forest. 35, Utah State. Refs take away at least 6 points off the board. Can I start that penalty first?
Okay, all right. I'll because, start there.
Well, we don't need to start in order. I didn't see it live. I'm like, people like refs complain. I'm like, people, calm down. Refs are fine. It's usually not a big deal. I felt that call. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, David Woodward basically went through the backfield, stripped the ball, and scored a touchdown. Okay. Like, very quickly, correct?
Yes.
So I watched replay. I didn't have the sound down, but I looked at it. I saw what the call was. The Wake Forest receiver basically bulldozed a Utah State defender, and then Utah State defender happens to grab the jersey to pull him down.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that a penalty? When he bulldozed a guy outside 5 yards too, the offensive guy.
I mean, I think that this was a game, though, with enough twists. Yeah. It was a game with enough twists and turns that you really can't pin it on any one turn of events.
Oh, I'm not, but I'm saying that was pretty egregious. That's why,
because you could easily make the case that Utah State took as many, if not more, points off the board just by shooting themselves in the foot on offense.
Yeah, red zone interceptions, red zone not scoring when they get, was it three times in the first half? They got 7 points out of it, something like that.
And that to me was kind of a recurring theme throughout the weekend, mm-hmm. was that teams who were driving into, you know, deep into opposing territory, and you know, Bill Connolly has his points per trip inside the 40 metric, which we've talked about in team previews over the offseason. But I mean, you look at that first quarter in particular, you know, they had four drives that ended up on Wake Forest's side of the field.
They scored plenty
on two of them.
Yeah,
they had that turnover on downs, mm-hmm. at 13, and they had an interception at the 4.
And then a guy flip over being tackled by three guys, which is a crazy play.
Yeah. So, you know, there were some missed opportunities there for Utah State to really assert their will in this game.
Yeah.
And when you let a team like Wake Forest hang around, again, this is, you know, they're not a bottom-dwelling ACC team. They're a team with some talent, even though they're, you know, breaking in some new guys at key positions.
Yeah, they could win 8 games possibly for, like, their ceiling might be 8 games this year, but they're above-average ACC team.
But you know, it's also unfair to pin it all on Jordan Love too. You know, he did have 3 interceptions.
Mm-hmm.
Probably could have had 2 or 3 more had the Deacons been able to hang on to the football.
Yeah.
But I mean, you saw, you know, both the good and the bad of Jordan Love. Yeah, I don't necessarily want to pile on because you know you saw multiple throws, you know, especially shots that the Aggies took down the field where, you know, they were right on target. You know, the highlight of that I think everybody remembers is the fade in the end zone to CIOC Mariner.
Yeah.
Who actually led the Aggies 8 catches, 118 yards, and a score.
I think Utah might want him back after their performance catching the ball.
But that's one of those instances where, you know, in the future, in future weeks, they need Love to be able to clean up his game.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not going to win many games when, A, you're giving the football away 3 times, -2 in turnover margin.
And not Hawaii here, folks.
Yeah, and B, they also gave up 579 yards to the Deacons.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of that had to do with, you know, it was tempered at least a little bit by the fact that they ran 105 plays, Wake Forest did. You know, so it was only 5.5 yards per play. There was a little bit of boom and bust, but, you know, considering how many playmakers the Aggies were bringing back this year, you know, you didn't necessarily expect them to see, especially in the passing game, get just gashed over and over again. The Wake Forest had 11 plays in the passing game of over 15 yards. I'm not expecting that to happen a whole lot this year, but that was definitely one of those things for, you know, as good as David Woodward was, you know, and Tipa Galea had his moments too. You know, he had a TFL. Nick Henninger had a sack and 2 TFLs. Yeah, Jacoby Wildman had a couple TFLs, but they gave up a lot of ground.
Yeah, like, if I like the good, like, Jordan Love still, with those 3 picks, still had over 400 yards passing,
mm-hmm.
over 50% passing. And what's really amazing, which should give Aggie, like, I'm not going to sugarcoat, they should have won this game. There's no reason for them to lose this game would happen. like you said, shooting himself in the foot, that one questionable call from the officials. But they should have won this game. Here's the thing, too. Love has three picks. They still almost win. That's a good sign. If you clean it up, you're going to win pretty much most games if that happens. Just go one pick, you're good. Jalen Warren, who I kind of mentioned last week, JUCO player of the year last year, came out, not out of nowhere, but maybe to some people, 141 yards, had that huge 59-yarder. And guys who weren't on the team last year, like Warren wasn't on the team last year, Associate Mariner wasn't on the team. He had, you mentioned, 118, a touchdown. Like, they had these guys who were out there who weren't on the team this past year are basically being their leading guys after game one against a pretty good team.
Yeah.
And that's because that's who we're looking for. We're looking for who they're playing. Numbers to carries, which is kind of interesting, over Bright, 19-9. That one long touchdown, or that long 59-yarder, even without it, he's still been about 90 yards. So the guys who are stepping up are guys we're slowly figuring out who it is, because I'd rather them play this game than, like we mentioned, San Jose State. They play well against an FCS team. It's, well, we'll wait and see. We know who they are. Clean up the turnovers. Defense is going to be okay. Clean up the secondary. You'll be pretty good. And I think I don't know if Warren's going to take over the starting spot after one game. I would probably say no. But when he doubles the carries of Gerald Bright, who's your number one guy, clear-cut number one guy coming in, it's a little interesting to see that.
So here's the last thing I don't want to talk about. I want to talk about that last Wake Forest drive.
Yes.
And when the Deacons went two plays, basically 88 yards, on an over after review, they ended up setting up shop at the two. What was it, the 1 or the 2 yard line or something like that?
Yeah, they're at the 1, and Utah State's defense was just shutting them down.
So should Utah State?
So it was 35-31.
Yes.
You're up 4. Yeah. Like, on 1st and 10 at the 11, let them score. Why? Like, that's a good point. I remember I've seen a couple games, seen NFL do it a couple times where, my best memory of that is when back, I don't know if you remember this, people might make it quick, but BYU and Wyoming played in, like, I think the first WAC title game back in Vegas. And it went to overtime. I believe it was Wyoming who won. I honestly don't recall. But one of the teams,
you're thinking of 1996, right? That was BYU.
Oh no, BYU would have won. Yeah, 96 BYU would have won because that's a Cotton Bowl year. And so there's a play where they just part the Red Sea, let them run, and they decided to I'll score a touchdown. They're up like 8, and I think that's what it is. They eventually end up being able to tie it. Like okay, we realize there's this much time on the clock. They can chew the clock up because they're far enough back. And if they score, we're screwed with no time left. But if they don't score, you know what I mean? Like, this game is exactly close, no time left to score. BYU opened up the gates, let them walk in the end zone. That's what Utah State should have done. Maybe give it a shot on. Here's the thing, you're up 4, so field goal does nothing, right?
Yeah.
They're going for it. So I see the point of maybe on first down and second down, like, play on those. I would say play defense of those possessions, because you win when they kick a field goal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if it's first and goal to one, just let them walk in. There is, 2 minutes on there? 2:19, I think it is? Instead, you're stuck with the minute. Basically an extra minute to get the ball. And Utah State did go down. Watching Jordan Love chuck those balls, it's crazy. He just falls forward and just whoosh. He is close on a couple of them, but why not give him an extra minute? I would have let them score. I would try to play defense because you know it's a touchdown. And if they get, like, inside, like, after two plays like this or one play, they get super close, just let them walk it in.
Yeah, I mean, I can't help but think that it might have been a much different situation had they been driving down the field with a little more time and all three of their timeouts.
And it doesn't help when it seemed like Jordan Love, they're chucking it every time. Like, every play was a Hail Mary, essentially.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess it mostly depends on how much you subscribe to the, you know, they left too much time on the clock philosophy.
Yeah, like, a minute's okay, but why not 2 minutes?
Yeah.
Just saying. So it's a good performance, a little unfortunate, but it happens. It's not gonna crush Utah State season by any means for what their goals probably were. So, and it's not you didn't lose to a bad team either. So,
well, and it's also worth noting that they were with Utah State in the secondary where they were without Cameron Haney, who because he was injured, at least for right now, still up in the air for next week against Stony Brook. But you know, it wasn't really that anybody in the secondary played well, so
yeah,
maybe getting him back will be one of those things that helps Utah State take a step forward in the weeks to come.
Possibly. All right, next game. We have a lot of games. We're going to say this could be the game of the weekend. This one's probably the game of the day, almost, I would say. Nevada,
yes,
Nevada 34, Purdue 31. There might be a potential to get a cool T-shirt this week. We'll keep you stay tuned, folks.
That's what we call a tease.
That's what we call it. Yeah, well, possibly Tuesday by the time you hear this. We'll see what happens. 34-31. Purdue had a 10-0 lead. They had a 24-7 lead. I watched a condensed version of this. I'm like, when is Nevada gonna do something? I just yelled Purdue with the ball the whole first half. It's like, let's move down, go. But I heard people complaining about like the quarterback for Nevada, Carson Strong back there. Ain't no picks. Can't be too disappointed with that. But that second half, man, something changed and they just kind of turned it on, outscoring 24 to set, or excuse me, 27-7. And Carson Strong led it. The defense buckled up and didn't let Purdue get down the field. Got a couple picks. It was a excellent turn of events to get a win over Purdue's basically like I'd say a little bit better than Wake Forest because we predicted a shootout with 68 points, maybe. But with Jeff Brohm there, people figure they just throw the ball and just crush non-conference opponents and put up 40 a game or something.
Am I misremembering, or did Wake Forest and Purdue play in a bowl game last year?
I'll double check if you want to mention something about the game here.
I mean, I think one of the big things, and this is something that we'll talk about later with at least one other game, is as the game progressed, I got the impression that things just started to slow down for Carson Strong in particular. It seemed like early on, and it wasn't though as though he was, misfiring on a lot of passes. Like I think in the first or second quarter, he was still like 8 of 12 or something like that. So it wasn't like they were being shy about taking shots and trying to get the ball into receivers' hands. But it just seemed like everything just kind of clicked as they hung in the game, as they kept throwing the football. Because he ended up throwing the football 51 times, which again, I do feel like someone on staff read my
Airwolf.
preview.
Yeah, Airwolf, right?
Yeah.
Come on.
And big things was that little
day. 56 yarder. No time left.
I couldn't believe it.
Who, like, he got a scholarship after the game. Amazing. Deservedly so. Like, what kicker in the league? Like, we got Cooper Roth at Wyoming. I'm spacing the Utah State kicker, is also very, very good.
Dominic Eberle.
Yeah, Everly, yes. Like, though even if those two guys were kicking, I'd give it like maybe a 20% chance to go in. This is deep NFL range kicking, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
this never goes over college kickers. This is like,
And he had room to spare on that one.
this is a desperation. We're close enough. We'll give it a shot. I'm guarantee Purdue. I don't recall off the top of my head. Purdue probably had somebody under the end zone just in case to catch it and take it back to try some sort of play. I didn't see, but maybe that's the case. But or I don't recall seeing that guy down there. But who does that kick? It's like, hey, we're close enough. We'll see if we get it. If not, it's overtime, right? What do you got to lose?
Exactly.
And he nailed it. So does this performance, obviously the win itself, but peeling back what we've known, what we thought of, we known about Nevada. I think this is a really, really, really good performance because you said Carson Strong slowed down, but this guy's making his first FBS start, and look what he does. No picks. Nearly 300 yards, ran for about 30 more. My only concern is Tauatua didn't, part of it there being down, only had 56 yards. He did have a touchdown, no long breakaway plays. That's probably one of my few concerns, and I guess the pass defense as well, but you got Rondell Moore, it's like you just do what you can, right, to stay afloat.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't a perfect performance from the Wolfpack. There are some things that they'll need to work on, especially with a game against an Oregon team that's still
Oregon.
likely to be ranked despite losing to Auburn this past
For
week.
them.
For instance, penalties for 95 yards.
Yeah.
They were only, I'm trying to look up the third down, they were only 5 of 17 on third downs. And while some of that was offset by the fact that they were also 2 of 2 on fourth downs, that's indicative, I think, of the aggression that Jay Norvell wanted to bring from the get-go. But that's one of those things that they're definitely going to want to improve upon when they go back and look at the tape and see those kind of missed opportunities to keep the chains moving where it's not so do or die.
Yeah, right now I think it's a 22-point line. I would say if they keep it within that, that'll be pretty good. And we'll get to that game later. So next game, the other Friday game, not going as well. The Power Five, Colorado State, Colorado, Rocky Mountain Showdown. I saw the end of this game was getting sort of close, but 52-31, Colorado won the game. Colin Hill looked okay. It was just to defense. It's what it comes down to for Colorado State. The defense lit them up. And here's the crazy thing, too. Like, the secondary for Colorado State did pretty good. It wasn't Chenault crushed getting beat, LaVisca going downfield and beat him. They held him, like, in reasonably pedestrian three catches, 48 yards. That's it. That wasn't the reason it lost.
You know what? I'm going to disagree with that.
Why?
Because they gave up 11.6 yards per attempt.
I'm just saying, like, oh, okay. I'm saying, like, the amount of yards. Okay, yes, you're correct on that. But I figured they would. I thought Montez would throw for like 350 plus. That's what I'm getting. Like, I felt Chenault would have had a bigger game than what he did. That's, and even though they still score 52 points, like, well, what did they do? They, you're right on the per play. I guess that's bigger when they get it. But, like, overall, I'm like, I thought they would pass way more. And so I give them a little credit for holding a few guys down, but everybody had a 15-plus catch, it looks like, almost 15 yards per reception.
And, I mean, you know, and you can blame the defense, I guess, for giving up 52 points and, you know, maybe more to the point. And, yes, you know, and I was having a brief discussion with this with our friend Justin Michael over at BSN Denver about this earlier. They didn't give up 9 yards per play. Yeah, like they did in last year's Rocky Mountain Showdown. but they still gave up 7.9 yards per play.
And 4 turnovers.
And that's the other thing. Because, you know, Colorado throughout the evening had a decided field position advantage. But, you know, at some point the defense has got to make a stop, you know, disadvantage or not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you are looking at, well, I'm trying to see if they have the average field position. It doesn't look like this game book does. Go figure. but I mean, you know, you just look at the drive chart, for instance, and, you know, it seemed like almost every time that they got set up with a short field, they had no problem punching it into the end zone. You know, 3 plays, 27 yards off of a fumble in the third quarter. You know, I don't know. It's just one of those things where, no, the offense didn't really do them any favors, even despite the fact that they were moving the ball. You know, at some point, something has to give on the defense, and at least for 1 week, it still looks like they have a lot of work to do.
Yeah, and it doesn't help they have the defensive touchdown by Colorado either late in the game to mm-hmm. basically seal it. When it was, like, I was watching the fourth quarter. Okay, it's 45-31. Colorado goes up. They have the back-to-back touchdown, essentially. Like, okay, it's reasonably close. Rams punt, forced to bust a punt on that fumble. I was like, okay, there's still time. You're down two. You're down, what? 31-52, 31-45, sorry. 14 points. You're still possibly in this game with, what, 7-8 minutes left in the contest, just about. But then the fumble's like, oh, that's it. I'm like, I'm out of here. Like, they, even though the score probably accurate for the turnover margin and things like that, but this was, the Rams were, I would say, somewhat close in this game until, like, the very end, we had the punt turnover downs, the punt return for, or the fumble return for TD. Like, if you're down 14 with 8 minutes left, they're still, you're not in it, but, you know, I mean, you're close enough to make something happen if you score any sort of points. And so they weren't, the 21 point or 31-52 score, yeah, it's a big loss, but they're still at points in this game or somewhat close. I guess 38-31, like, they're just a step or two behind the whole game. That's basically what it was.
Mm.
And they weren't able to. Yeah, you're right. Defense, running game does okay, but, like, I don't want to blame defense, but you're right. At some point, defense has to do something.
Well, yeah, and I mean, you know, Montez only threw the ball 20 times, but he had 232 yards.
Yeah.
And
they ran the ball, you know, too. They couldn't stop
it. Yeah, and their lead running back averaged over 6.5 yards per carry. That, yeah. You know, at some point, it's, you know, it can't just be the same old Rams defense. But, I mean, on top of that, do you agree with Mike Bobo's comments about the refs?
I saw him ripping it. What exactly did he say? Do you have that in front of you?
Well, he had a lot to say about the refs.
I only saw a little bit of it because I was watching with the sound off and only really saw the fourth quarter, so I wasn't able to see a ton of this game.
Overall. So, you know, the headline from the Denver Post in an article from Sean Keeler, it starts with, "It's bullcrap." You know, I don't understand how big a game this is that you don't have neutral refs.
I saw that. Were these Pac-12 refs?
Yes, they were.
First off, this is not a big game nationally, so who cares, if we're being honest, right?
Yeah, I guess
in the
so.
Grand scheme of things, it's not. Let's be fair. But I agree, you probably shouldn't have Pac-12 or Mountain West crew doing this game, because typically, it's usually, I don't know how it works. Independent games are different, but I guess it's the home crowd, home team gets to pick. Sometimes it's not. If it's a non-conference game, it probably should be a refereeing crew that's not in this conference, either conference. Is that, I don't know, is that super common? Because you see games, oh, like a non-conference game, oh, this is an American crew doing a game, this is a blah, blah, blah crew. I don't recall. I just, my knowledge isn't quite there, I'm thinking, but it would make sense to not be a crew from either league in any non-conference game to make it seem more fair, right?
Yeah, I guess.
But here's the thing: do the re like the refs? Is that really you're gonna lay on the line for that for a 21-point loss to the refs?
Yeah, the refs aren't letting Buffalo's receivers get open all day long.
They're not letting the giant hole go up the middle. The guy averaged like what, 6 yards a carry, rushing the ball, yards a carry. Player two,
Exactly.
there's always a couple plays here or there. Like, without thinking of anything specific, that Utah State pe penalty or was egregious, very, or that TD got called back. It's no coach or guys better stop somebody in defense. Like, you could, that's a valid argument, I would say, to not having a conference officiating crew who's within the game the teams play. Even though the refs, they should be fine. They're not going to be. I doubt the refs are also rooting for Colorado to win. It's not like they get a bonus or anything if your Pac-12 team wins, you're refing, you know what I mean? And so it's they're officiating the game. They're also familiar with Colorado, most likely, these guys on some level. So, no, Mike, be quiet and win some games and quit blaming your inefficiency to coach a team up to win a game. Beat a
There you
freaking
go.
rival for once, coach. Come on.
Yeah,
Just saying.
basically.
No. Yeah, the only gripe I said, like, if it's a, it should be a non-affiliated reffing crew. Besides that, they're professionals. They're not getting paid on the side. You know what I mean? It's like, come on, get over yourself. All right. Are we on for Saturday now?
I think we are.
New first game of Saturday, which is this your game of the weekend, or is this the conference's game of the weekend for how it turned out and finished and all the everything what happened with it? Boise State,
I think
Florida
it
State.
was.
This game, when we did the preview, it was not known that Hurricane Dorian would cause a lot of havoc, and I think it currently is being a Category 5, so be safe if you're out in the area, folks. 36-31 got moved to Tallahassee. Boise State fans took over the stadium at some point because it was a free-for-all seating, which is pretty cool.
Credit to them, by the
Yeah.
way.
It ended up being, yeah, fans who made, like, they're like, oh, it's not a far drive. I'm like, he's like, oh, people probably flew into Jacksonville. It's like, well, you got to change hotels, maybe get a rental car and get to Tallahassee. It's like, come on. Like, it's not, whatever. I just, whatever, it happened. They won 36-31 with, you're right, your bold prediction may not be so bold with Hank Bachmeyer breaking all sorts of records for Boise State.
Well, you have to hope he survives the season.
Oh boy,
You know,
yeah.
especially in that first half, he was getting the crap kicked out of him.
He got sacked, what, six times, I want to say? Eight times? Six times.
Six times.
Official hurries, eight. Knockdowns, probably half a dozen.
Quarterback hits is listed as eight.
Oh, eight, okay. He was getting crushed and standing up and making throws while getting hit. It wasn't, oh, he got like blindsided one time, didn't fumble the ball, which was pretty nice in that first half. He held onto it tight. But I'm going to say, like, Florida State fans, whatever, I'm going to say Boise State won this game more than Florida State lost the game.
I mean, I think I would definitely agree with that, just because you look at the way things changed throughout that game. It seemed to me like it was almost like a tale of two halves. Just looking at the first half, for instance, the yardage was fairly even as far as total offense is concerned. But when you looked at the yards per play, Boise State was running more plays, which we'll talk more about that in a minute. But in that first half, the Seminoles averaged almost 11 yards per play. And it was the kind of thing there, that those big explosive plays in the first half were what really enabled them to take that big lead. They had that 38-yard touchdown run to open the scoring from Cam Akers. They had the 70-yard touchdown from James Blackman to Tomorian Terry. And then they had another one for 58 yards, 58-yard touchdown pass. So that was, the big difference in the first half versus the second half, because you go back and look at what they were doing as far as yards per play in the second half, and it was completely reversed. Boise State was still running a huge number of plays, but after halftime, the Seminole averaged 2.3 yards per play.
Yeah.
And that was a huge turnaround for the defense.
Yeah, 0 points. Punt. Florida State second half drive. Punt. 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 Fumble. Punt. 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 Punt.
They
Downs.
had nothing to offer him after halftime.
And that fumble, like near the Boise fumbled in, what, five? It seemed like five Florida State guys couldn't land on the ball. It's like,
That was crazy.
let's try to pick it up and run, which goes to your point, Football Outsiders. Fumble luck is a thing because you would think Florida State, oh, we got two guys here, a third or fourth guy nearby. We got the ball, an oblong shaped ball with 2 points at
Just
the
fall
end.
on it.
Yeah, you're not, I don't care who you are. Like, you're right there, you're near the end zone. It's like, just fall on the ball. You have the ball. Maybe you won the game if you get that ball.
I mean,
But,
to me, the stat of the game is that for the entire game, Florida State had a combined 11 chunk plays. You know, they had four through the air and seven on the ground. One of them came after halftime.
Pretty big deal. And
It is.
it's like it seemed like, oh, you mentioned the plays. What, they run 108 plays?
They did.
How does a team, it looked like Florida State was a team that never played in that heat or humidity before.
That was surprising too. Well,
Like,
and I forget who it was that had the note about the offensive lineman for Boise, about how I think it was John Molchan, Ezra Cleveland, and Garrett Larson. Larson missed only one play, and the other two played every single snap.
jeez, it's
That's
ridiculous.
impressive.
That is that he and they're running the ball, they're blocking, or maybe not blocking some points because Bachmeyer got hit a few times throughout.
Yeah,
But
and I
like,
mean,
oh
and going
man.
back to Bachmeyer, you know, that was another one of those things that really turned as the game progressed because, you know, he was seeing a lot of pressure early on in that first half, and it had an effect on, you know, his ability to get the ball down the field. Like he did have some chunk plays in that first half. You know, he had the 36-yard completion to CT Thomas. You know, he had 20-yard completions to Helani and John Bates. So he was making some plays, but you know, you look at his first 30 pass attempts, he was only 13 of 30. But he finished basically with three incompletions in his last 20 attempts.
So
And that was another one of
yeah.
those things where that, you know, the defense started really asserting itself, but it was also that passing game too, that bank, you know, not only Bachmeyer, but you know, pretty much everybody in that receiving core. You know, Shakir had 8 catches on 10 targets. CT Thomas had 5 catches. Killian Butler. You know, so Florida State couldn't focus on one guy because they were being so effective distributing the ball. And it goes back to what I was saying in the preview podcast, efficiency matters.
Yeah.
And, you know, they didn't have it in the beginning, but they found it as the game went along. Not only in the air either.
Well,
Robert
also,
Mahone.
oh yeah.
We can't overlook what he was able to do because, you know, like I said, I thought he was the most important person to this offense in this particular game. And after this performance where he had 24 carries, 142 yards, 2 scores, he might still be the most important cog in this offense going forward, too.
He went.
Especially if he can keep having up performances like that.
Yeah, in this game, it's like they're gonna be ranked when the polls come out Tuesday morning because they're just on the cusp. They'll be, who knows,
I
22.
don't know if they will.
Ooh, why is that? Come
Well,
on.
when you just look at all the teams that were ahead of them, not enough of them lost.
Let me take a quick look here. The Northwestern lost to Stanford, right?
Northwestern lost, Missouri
Okay.
lost. We'll get into in a moment.
Nebraska barely beat freaking Southern Alabama. So, sup, Nebraska fans?
Yeah, but the AP is thirsty for Nebraska. So, I mean, you really have to look through those teams that were in like the
Miami didn't
also
play.
receiving votes.
Cincinnati, would they jump over Boise if we beat UCLA? I think Florida State's better than UCLA.
No, I get what you're saying.
Okay, I thought they were closer than they were. I thought they were like two spots
They were
off.
33rd overall in the top 25.
Coaches
I
pulled, they might
think
get
that
in there,
they're
right?
definitely going to get at least 2 or 3 spots closer. But you know, Army won, Mississippi State won.
Army, don't get me started on Army.
They're going to jump at least one, two, because Miami lost three. They're going to jump at least 3 spots, so they're going to be at least 30th.
Well, coaches poll, they might get in. They're 27 right now.
That's probably true.
Yeah, Nebraska, which,
Northwestern
yeah.
lost,
Did Iowa State lose?
like you mentioned. Iowa State escaped in triple
Oh, that's
overtime,
right.
remember?
NIU, that's right. Okay, yeah, I
Against an
knew.
FCS team.
Boise should be 25th in the coaches poll. I'll call it right now. That's where they should be.
Yeah, and there, but it's at least for the AP poll, it's probably going to take another week or
Yeah,
two,
I didn't realize how
through
far
no
they're
fault of
back.
their own,
Yeah,
I
so.
might add.
And they got a pretty good Marshall team next week, so we'll see on Friday night. So, any last words on Boise, or say kudos and move on next game?
Can we also give a shout out to Eric Saxe?
What did Eric Saxey do?
He went 5 of 5 on field goals.
Boom, there you go. All the points, right?
Automatic.
All right, so yeah, excellent game. This
Oh, you know what? One more note.
Ooh.
And this is from the press conference that Brian Harsin did today. We're recording on Monday the 2nd. Worth keeping an eye on DeAndre Pierce's status as well as right tackle John Ojukwu because both of those guys were banged up in this game against the Seminoles. Their status for now is TBD, and fingers crossed we'll have a little more to talk about in our preview later this week.
All right, that'll be interesting to fly back to town, cross country, Friday night game, home. All right, next game we have Saturday was it's pretty crazy over the board. Sorry. What's the next game here? I'm backing up on all my tabs here. I am
Air
not.
Force 48, Colgate 7.
You called it. take the over no matter what, or take the not the over, but the what were they, 19 points? Like, take it. That's too, not enough points. Take the points.
Yeah.
So what's up with quarterback? I know not just the one pass thing. Donald Hammond had what, 5 carries? That's it.
Well, did you see how many people got carries?
I did, but it's still odd.
Okay, right? So for those of you who don't have the box score in front of you, I just want to make a note of this.
Do it.
17 different guys had a carry.
Checks out. Typical Air Force game.
423 yards, and that's 6.5 yards per carry.
That's good, I'd say, right?
Yeah, and nobody had more than 10. So, you know, it was, and it wasn't like they really had to work that hard either.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed like basically every time they had the ball, they were able to punch it in for a touchdown.
Well, Hammond did have a 60% conversion rate on 5 carries for scores.
Yeah, and they had short fields on at least 3 of those scoring drives. Like, they picked off Grant Brenneman to open the game, and then they went 6 plays, 33 yards, you know, like clockwork. You know, they had another drive later in the first half where it was 3 plays, 46 yards. And then they had another fumble right before halftime where it was, they set them up at the 1 yard line. They were able to punch in it right away. As far as the game that I saw, it did seem like Hammond had more of the playing time, even though Isaiah Sanders had the one pass attempt that they had all game long. Oh, no, by the way, that went for 41 yards.
Yeah, no big deal.
So, really not much else to talk about, I don't think, other than maybe giving a shout out to the defense because they stepped up in a big way. But I think that that was to be expected, you know, given the historical success they've had against FCS programs. They only give up 161 yards, 3.2 yards per play. Mm-hmm. They were just pretty good all around.
Yeah, they have an off week before they go to Colorado on September 14th. So.
And that's going to be a pretty good game.
That should be a pretty good game, too. So Nebraska, Colorado have played CSU, rival, Nebraska this week, and then Air Force. So mm-hmm. It might be a little banged up, so we'll see how that goes. All right, next game, because ESPN screwed me on the order, so I'm going back to where it should be. Is next game, Sam Houston State, New Mexico?
39-31, Lobos win.
You know what a shock? Well, I guess first off, hope Bob Davey, sounds like he may have had a heart attack of some sort, chest pain. Makes sense. Yep.
And the last thing I remember seeing is that he is expected to make a full recovery.
That's good.
So that's obviously good news.
Yeah, it was something during the game. Our buddy Rogers at the game messaged me like, hey, look what happened. He left the game, no press conference. So hopefully he should be good to go. Unless, do we need to one-up Hugh Freeze and do something in the press box with Bob Davey?
Oh, no, it's not. That did, you know what? That didn't work well for Liberty.
It looks sad, too, a little bit, right?
They got shut out by – yeah, it did look very sad. But they got shut out by Syracuse, so yeah. Maybe don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. So the game, 39-31. No court. I guess it's just the quarterback with 4 players, not the quarterback at all.
They only had 2 guys see action.
Yeah.
Brant Hughes got the start, and he was only replaced by Sheron Jones because he suffered an injury.
Not good.
And the latest from Steve Bergen over at the Albuquerque Journal says that Brant Hughes did practice today. So I would guess that he's probably going to be the starter going into next week. But you know, the bigger news that may be overlooked is that Aaron Blackwell went down with a knee injury, and his status is still to be determined.
That's not good. They need him out there.
It's not great.
Not good. Also, yeah, because he only ended up having 3 tackles in the game. But the one stat on this game, like, yes, they went 39-31. 2 things I want to point in this game. Is this the passing Lobos now, is this what they wanted the past 4 years, essentially?
This is the Throbos.
There you go. That's right. Oh, that's right. I was trying to think of the hashtag by stumbling. What did we do?
It's finally here.
We were 4 years too early on it.
Okay, so did you actually get to watch any of this game?
I chose not to. I focused on the other games. I did not go back to watch this one. I did see they went 1-15 on third down, which isn't ideal.
This struck me as a very strange game.
Why?
Especially on the offensive side of the ball, because you look at the overall numbers, you know, between Brant Hughes and Sheron Jones, they were only 18 of 40
yeah.
for 340 yards. Though they were just taking shots down the
guys. We'll get one.
Watch, but you know, you look at you go down the box score, you see you know Anu Samoye, for instance, had 3 catches, 62 yards with a long of 29. You know, Mari Davis had a 51-yard catch. Jordan Kress, his only catch was 47 yards. They had so many chunk plays
Should we name this the hashtag throw bows instead of like five O's in there?
No, I think one is enough.
Okay.
But like they had at least what, one, two, three, four, five, six different receivers with at least a 120-yard catch. And it wasn't all about J. Griffin the fourth and Elijah Lilly too, even though again those guys combined for five catches and about 79 yards or 69 yards, excuse me. But there was the same thing on the ground too. Like Amari Davis had 16 carries for 114 yards, but half of those came on a 53-yard run.
Yeah, but that's also what we want to see from them, which they've been lacking the past couple of years, that explosive running game. At least the one play in this matchup.
And that's the thing, because it was very, very boom or bust. We've talked about like efficiency in the past, and I remember this was something I mentioned explicitly in the Lobos preview podcast. Where they had this explosive element, it was just really fascinating to just watch them take so many shots down the field. And I'm wondering how that offense is going to change. Because. Sam Houston State didn't have a great defense, obviously, to give up so many pass plays. I mean, I'm just wondering how often they're going to be able to get away with running that kind of offense.
Just chuck it and hope it works.
Yeah, basically.
No, it's not going to work. I'll tell you right now. They can't just run four verts every time and go up
Well,
and
no,
catch it.
it wasn't even that they
Well,
were
I know.
running four
But you know
verts.
what I
They
mean?
had
But you can't.
basically two or three guys running down the field.
You got to have something else. You got to mix up underneath play action. You have to have a tight end out there. You got to do something. You can't just throw bombs every time and hopefully it works out. You got to mix up your route tree there, Coach Joe Bailey. Come on, get it together. But they got the win, which is good for them. We'll see if hopefully Bob Davies back for the game next week. Who do they got next week? I just looked at it.
Notre Dame.
Oh boy, who right now is in a rock fight with Louisville, apparently like 21-14 or something. So
Really?
it's what that. Let me double check the score, even though it's great for on-demand audio if people know the score tomorrow when they listen here. Score at the moment as my ESPN page loads. Oh, it's 28-14 Notre Dame up. So
Yeah. All right then.
not the 30-point victory they're expecting apparently.
Well, and here's the other thing to keep an eye on too. Even despite the explosive plays that the Lobos were able to put up, Sam Houston State ran 95 plays against them, and at least in terms of raw total offense, they outgained the Lobos 558 to 485. On a per play basis, that's still a shade under 6 yards per play. And they did force two fumbles as well, recovering one of them. That's something else that I think is a really encouraging sign, is that they were able to kind of win that turnover battle, if even slightly.
Yeah, plus one.
But that's something to keep an eye on, is how healthy that defense is going to be, especially if Blackwell's gone for a long time. That's one of their few proven starters on that side of the ball.
What
So
are the
if
few?
he's gone, it's going to be really interesting to watch how they respond on that side of the ball.
And it should be Notre Dame games in 2 weeks, not this weekend. So they have a
Okay, there
bye.
you go.
So I was double checking. I'm like, wait, I did the week two early lines. I'm like, I don't remember Lobos. Did I miss one? It's possible I could have missed one, but I did not. All right, next game, Missouri. Well, I mean, another amazing game. Mountain West crushing it versus the P5, right?
Yes, they did.
37-31. Neither of us were close on this. We figured Missouri would go out in a cakewalk and crush this game. Instead, Shawn Chambers throws the first or second nasty stiff arm, depending on what you ask Robert Mahone in this game, or in the weekend, I guess. 70-something yards for a touchdown, stiff arm in the defensive end trying to get him down. 37-31, 27 points in that second quarter. What does this Wyoming offense think? Who do they think they are? 27 in the second quarter?
I mentioned this on Twitter. This was like the first glimpse at exactly the kind of team that Craig Bull wants to build in
I saw
Laramie.
that, yeah.
Ball control, punishing opportunistic defense.
I would think he'd not want to go 6-16 passing, but he'll take the win this time to work
Yeah,
on that.
probably not.
But the running game looked well with Valaday, 118 for him, average almost 10 yards a carry, multiple huge running plays on the ground. Every like passing game was quite well. Like what was that, 14 yards of reception, even though it was only six? They moved the ball well. Defense skipped a lot of points. But look at these guys, like Logan Wilson had, look what he did in this game. He had all these guys tackle machines across the field. They got to the quarterback a ton, got a couple sacks, a couple TFLs. Missouri just that second quarter, like Kelly Bryant did pretty well, but they gave up 31 points, which is a decent amount because they tried to mount that comeback in the fourth quarter. But the running game didn't do all that well. They ran 42 times, Missouri. Only 114 yards.
That to me was maybe the most impressive part of the performance.
Yeah, the way
you know, the way they shut down Larry Roundtree in particular. Mm-hmm. He only had 15 carries, 51 yards.
Yeah, he and the way they're you think the way they're passing, that would have opened them up for Wyoming to be back on their feet to allow a running play to work well.
Mm-hmm.
To where they're gonna we know they're gonna pass. They're passing
quite the box. We're not gonna run blitz. We'll just go on and see what happens and drop 6 to 8.
Yeah. But that was a pretty impressive there. The secondary, yeah, does need to get its act together a little bit. You can't have when they have at least four to six plays. I'm looking at your 6 plays, 20-plus yards, catching the ball, receiving. Can't.
Yeah, and I mean, most of that, though, was when they were Missouri was trying to rally.
Yeah, but still.
I mean, to me, the turnovers that they were able to create in the secondary were the much bigger deal. You know, the fact that they were able to get pressure, especially on that end zone interception that Bryant threw.
Definitely.
You know, to me, I think that was really game. Because they flushed Bryant and made him make a really poor decision throwing back against his body for what turned out to be a really easy turnover.
Well, then also the defensive touchdown as well.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big deal, too. Because it's 14-3 at that point. Missouri's driving down the field. Well, sort of driving. They went 10 yards. Had Missouri gone down, got any sort of touchdown or points. But that was a huge turning point as well.
Yes, it was.
Kind of bounced around. They kicked the field goal. Great. Get on the board. Fumble return for touchdown. Defense comes back, forces the punt, then comes back. Offense comes. And so that was probably the turning point. Run. Yeah, it's 17-14, but you scored 17 straight points in like a minute. It seemed like 2 minutes. And so, and Missouri, they're not going to be in the coaches' poll because they're bowl banned this year. But people are thinking this could be a pretty good Missouri team.
And yeah, I mean they were 17-point favorites. Outside the top 25 in the AP, they were 26th actually.
Yeah, 17-point favorites. People make fun of like, oh, the Pac-12 lose these games, but look at SEC. Tennessee gets crushed. You have this Missouri game, which they lost. They didn't play well in some other stuff. It's like, had this been the Pac-12 or anybody else, they'd be all laughing at them. But SEC, get your act together as well. Come on.
Is it so?
And this game was another. You know, what we talked, what I've mentioned a couple times is, you know, when you get to the opponent's 40-yard line, when you are driving into the red zone, you have to take advantage of those opportunities,
mm-hmm.
and. You know, unlike some other teams that we have and will talk about.
Utah State. We already did.
But Utah State's not alone. We'll get to the other guy.
All right, let's go quickly because we got to make this about an hour show here. So next game.
They had four touchdowns and six opportunities in the red zone.
Boom. Do it. All right.
That's a big deal.
Hey, what did I tell everybody about Weber State and San Diego State? Watch out, right? Did I not tell people to be careful?
You know, I can admit that I watched this entire game.
Oh, I watched a 17-minute Cadets game, and I was still bored out of my mind. It's like, oh, crap, this is terrible. 6-0, so it means Weber State covered. Am I – okay.
Well, that's right, they did.
It was 7.5.
I didn't even think about that.
So here's the thing. We did our power polls this week. I put San Diego State 12th, and I can defend that clearly.
Okay, defend it.
Here's the thing really quick. People like Colin, people get back and forth because I'll post mine, you, Garage, Colin – other guys, Logan, I don't know who posted every this week, but we'll put up a composite later this week. I get one person says if there's a clear understanding of how we'd vote, it'd be more clear. So if we can defend our vote, every power ranking is valid. I think that's an accurate statement. When I write my little blurb to intro, I'm like, people are voting as they wish, and here's the ways. I am voting on a couple reasons. For me, this is no longer a season-long projected order of finish.
Okay.
Because, hence, a game was played, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at I know the defense did amazing things because Josh Davis, Davis from Weber State is really, really good. They held him to 7 yards. Great. The whole defense, they just did their thing. They stopped Weber State in their tracks cold. Constantine had a good percentage throwing the ball, but only had 119 yards. Your offense is, I don't care if you're playing North Dakota State, the best FCS team in the world, it seems like. North
have to score points.
Usually have anything, but my point is for the ranking last, this is not going to be more than 1 week. This is going to be, they're not going to be 12th next, I guarantee it. First off, you didn't win your game. Or sorry, you won your game, please. Sorry, apologies. You won your game, but you beat an FCS team and looked dreadful doing it. I know I should take more into consideration for defense, but if you look at the other wins, I'm not going to put them above any team that won this weekend. This was clearly the worst win, so that knocks them up quite a bit for me. Out of the losses, like Fresno was close to USC, they had a chance to win. You looked at what's the other games here that lost them? I guess Colorado State could have been at the bottom, but they put up points. They actually scored. You had Wake Forest, a close loss, and then that's it. You know what I mean? Their win was the worst overall, and they played an FCS team and only won by 6 points. That's my reason they're at the bottom, because their performance by far was the worst of the whole weekend.
So I'm going to point out one caveat.
Okay, do it.
Which is that Juwan Washington in particular was banged up in the first quarter.
Okay.
That game. Suffered an ankle injury. Still had 22 carries, but he only had 55 yards.
You got another running backs, don't you?
It may be, see, that's the thing. Because nobody else really had an opportunity to cover themselves in glory. Like, Jordan Bird had 5 carries and 50 yards, but half of those yards came on a 23-yard run. You know, Chance Bell had 3 carries, 18 yards, but, you know, one 11-yard carry kind of skews that a little bit. To me, the bigger problem is Ryan Agnew.
Yeah, me too. You don't have a quarterback. People giving us crap about, he's not.
They brought in the job for quarterback. He's not very good, and I knew he's not very good, and so did you.
Well, but I mean, it's not entirely his fault either. Like, I watched the whole game, and it didn't seem like the offense had any imagination whatsoever.
You're telling me a Rocky Log offense did not have any sort of imagination to do anything creative? Is that what you're telling me?
Like, I would have imagined, like, more rollouts for one.
Yeah, they like.
You know, when I think of a spread offense, I'm not thinking of, like, a pistol with 2 running backs in the backfield. I'm not thinking of an offense that still ran the ball more on first down than passed. But maybe there's a reason for that.
Well, they said...
Maybe there's a reason that you're giving them a new look and you're still relying on the running game.
Well, that's what they said during the offseason. Spring, it's going to be basically the same style of offense. We just want to put in a shotgun, take advantage of Agnew's legs, which they did not.
They're lucky they're playing UCLA this coming week.
No kidding. Like, the offensive line terrible. UCLA. So I wouldn't be shocked if San Diego State goes in and beats UCLA like 17-3.
No, I guess not. But I mean, you know, to give more context to what you were saying earlier about the defense too, you know, I don't want to overlook that because they held Weber State to just 3 yards per play.
No, Weber State's good for FCS, and the defense assets played amazing.
And it was really surprising because Weber State, it didn't seem like they had an opportunity to take a shot down the field all game long. It seemed like Constantine was just trying to, you know, dump off crossing patterns and so on. And I think that that's a credit to the San Diego State secondary in particular.
Yeah.
They really locked down Weber State's receivers. But, you know, more to the point, you know, they had 14 total drives. They had exactly one play on San Diego State's side of the field. And they had 6 3 and outs. So, you know, to me, I get the impression this is going to be a lot like last year where, at least for the time being, they're only going to go as far as the defense can carry them.
Do you mean like every year? Almost? Yeah. I'm just saying, this is not the norm. This is the norm, except for I expect a better rushing attack. It's like,
I
mean, so
I think that the offense is rightly under a lot of scrutiny for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and so me putting them 12, maybe it was me being, oh, I'm just going to put them 12 because, but one game... Out of all, like I said, all the victories, the worst victory. Offense laid the biggest egg in the world, so whatever. Even if they lose to UCLA next week, they probably won't be last. I'm just saying, you can't have that performance. All right, so real quick, next game, UNLV, Southern Utah. You're right, 56-23. Armani Rogers played quite well. Threw it percentage-wise well. He ran the ball well. Charles Williams ran the ball well. They played pretty well overall, I'd say. I mean, like, defense, 23 points, that's fine. But it's rushing defense. Whew, that was a good performance by them. 40-something yards given up.
Yeah, I mean, and 23 of Southern Utah's points came in the fourth quarter when the game was already well out of reach. To me, the story of the game is how the offense changed to really set Rogers in particular up for success. You know, because he had one of the stronger passing performances of his career.
Yeah.
And a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were just kind of throwing short. You know, they were, you know, playing, you know, using a little bit of play action and, you know, maybe more importantly, spreading the ball around to, you know, familiar faces like Mekhi Stevenson, who had 35 yards on 3 catches and a touchdown, or, you know, new guys like Steve Jenkins or Noah Bean, you know.
11 total guys caught a pass.
Yeah, and they didn't have to do too much in the passing game, you know, not only because Rogers was dominant on the ground as well. You know, he averaged over 10 yards a carry, but if you had any questions about Charles Williams and his ability to replace Lexington Thomas, he averaged 9.5 yards per carry on 15 attempts. I think that part of the offense is going to be just fine.
Yeah, I expect the offense to be okay. The only concern I'd have, like, Rogers a bit more efficient, which he was. Passing defense did fine. Didn't give up they're okay. I mean, they're good enough. And like you said, the fourth quarter, putting backups. And then you had
Obled did pretty good.
Relief for Amari Rodgers. So there's something there, because we mentioned there's a concern because Max Williams out for a couple games, right? And so he's your guy. So we know Rodgers could be – the way he style of play could get hurt. And so that's good to see him go out there and be fairly successful in his time, 7-11. So
yeah, all in all, exactly the kind of performance you would have wanted to see out of UNLV in this game.
All right, next game. Is this the final game? Am I correct on this?
That is correct.
Fresno State, USC. 31-23. This game, I got to see most second half. I came in right after the JT Daniels injury, which, ouch, dang, that hurt. Turned around backwards, got the knee twist, ACL. So how come, here's my big question, Matt. How come Rod Gilmore can't pronounce Jorge Reyna correctly?
Oh, God, why can't Rod Gilmore just spout common sense?
That, like, I saw people complain, the field goal thing, this, that. I thought the late field goal was fine because it kind of worked out for him. Like when it was like the 15, 16 point game late in the third quarter, whatever it was, 18. I'm like, I could see either side, but how can you not say Jorge Reyna properly? You think I'm bad at names? Come on, Rod.
Yeah, he's on national television doing that.
I am not. So 31-23. What was your impression? Because this is your team, your most rooting interest team of the league. The passing yardage were okay. Running game not ideal with Reyna leading the team rushing. That comeback fell up short with that one interception in the end zone to basically, well, it did end the game there in that fourth quarter.
Long story short, this was a really frustrating game to watch.
I could see that. It's sort of close enough. They're just like, it's like the Rams game, except closer. You know what I mean? Like they're just there. You know what I mean? Like close enough. Yeah.
And there were different reasons for that. Like the first reason was, you know, the fact that it seemed like for at least the first couple of drives, they had no answer for the air raid.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe some of that is just a credit to USC's receivers who, you know, obviously with Daniels' status, he's, you know, like you said, he's done for the year. Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly how good the backup Kedon Slovis is. You know, he was 6 of 8 for 57 yards with an interception.
Mm-hmm.
But USC's receivers are really good.
Yeah.
And they were schemed open in such a way that they just couldn't stop them on those first two drives. And so once the game finally got to a place where, you know, Daniels was having a little more trouble finding the open receiver, Fresno State was, you know, occasionally getting a little more pressure on him before he could, you know, hit the open man. You know, by that point they were down 14-0. And, you know, on the other side of the ball, you know, again, USC's defensive line also really good.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably worth noting that Fresno State isn't likely to face this much talent on defense for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Which I think does a lot to explain why Reyna was, you know, not only 19 of 39 for, you know, those 256 yards. He was also the team's leading rusher as well because they put a lot of pressure on him. And everybody was pointing out, like, his jersey was grass stained, like, all over the place.
In the first half, it was basically, what are you trying to do? Dirty.
It seemed like he was just under fire almost past.
It did, yeah.
And maybe to Rod Gilmore's credit, he did note that on the rare occasions where the Bulldogs were able to take shots down the field with, you know, plays that developed, they did have some success. You know, yeah. Not only with the touchdown throw to Darion Grimm, but, you know, they had the big fourth down play to Chris Coleman. So, I mean, it wasn't like it was a total offensive failure. It was just
tough team.
They were having to compete with such talent in you know, what turned out to be fairly big mismatches, at least for certain stretches of the game. And those mismatches ended up being kind of the big difference, because even though they did force four turnovers, you know, including two interceptions, yeah, and they had two fumble recoveries and things like that. And even though Michael Walker was back there tackling both the quarterback and the running back on a huge fourth down play late in the fourth quarter, yeah, it was just one of those things where it just didn't all come together.
Yeah, they had 6 points off four turnovers. And then the end of the first half, they had back-to-back chances after the pick and the fumble. Just had punt the ball away, end of half. So there's a... They had a chance, like, even, like you said, Reyna not playing amazingly well because of USC secondary. they still had chances to win this game. They had, like I said, four turnovers, the intercept, that huge fourth down play mentioned Coleman going down the field, the end zone on the corner on the first and 15. I get taking a shot, but 15 yards, I guess that's the only place to go, really, end zone, unless you may want to try to run it, but 1:45 left, that's not what you want to do. Like, do you think, like, how outplayed, do you think they really outplayed this too much in this game, or is it just maybe talent kind of won out a little bit more?
They were definitely outplayed in the first quarter.
Yeah, I would say that for sure. Yeah, they're down 14-3 quickly.
I mean, I think that once they settled down, I don't think that they were necessarily outplayed for most of the rest of the game. Obviously, and I don't think we mentioned the 100-yard kickoff return.
Oh, whoops, yeah.
That Velus Jones had for SC. That was a backbreaker.
Yeah.
But maybe even more to the point, you know, we talked about it with Utah State. We talked about it a little bit with Wyoming. But this was the last situation where Fresno State had opportunities to be more aggressive down in the USC red zone, and they chose to settle.
Well, not yeah, except for the end of the game when they are aggressive, they had to pick. But you had to be aggressive there.
Yeah, and you know, just I'm going to go down the line on down the drive chart. So they were, I think it was 4th and 5 on that first opportunity in the first quarter. They were at the USC 27, or maybe it was 4th and 2. It was one or the other.
But yeah, they 4th and 2.
That first
yeah.
field goal. Mm-hmm.
Which that's fine. It's well, I don't know. You're down 14-0.
And then, you know, and then, you know, you have to kind of fast forward to the third quarter. But, you know, their very first drive, they go from their own 25-yard line down to the USC 12. And then they give the ball away on a fumble.
Yeah, first and goal right there.
Very next drive, they get it back on a fumble. You know, they're only able to move it 8 yards. But, again, it's 4th and 2 at the USC 29. You are double-digit underdogs on the road. Why are you settling for field goals?
And you're, like, you're down only a touchdown at that point, too. Like maybe that's why. Maybe that's their. Here's why I'm thinking they would go for it there, because defense had. If you look at, if you go back to the end of the first half, USC went interception, fumble, fumble. Their next three, all their previous three possessions were all turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe like, oh, defense got something. We'll take points. Our defense is doing fine. Maybe that's their thinking. Which
they just weren't aggressive enough.
They weren't. I get it, but my point maybe. I would go for it too, maybe once or twice, but I think three straight possessions, three straight turnovers, our defense is on it. We'll take any points we get. We'll get it back again. But then, like you mentioned, that 100-yard kickoff return's like crap. That's like probably, I'd circle that as probably the biggest play of the game, because momentum was going in Fresno's favor, even though they gave the ball up, only scored 3 points from those three straight turnovers by USC. They don't get a touchdown there, or let's just say they just go down the field and maybe they get a touchdown later, but that touchdown's like crap. And then next drive, same thing.
Especially considering that the Bulldogs were only 5 of 16 on third downs.
Yeah.
And they were 2 of 2 on fourth downs. Why wouldn't you be more aggressive?
At least one of the times. Like, maybe the second time. Like, I get maybe the first time you're not going to do it, but I don't know. My coach thinking what Tedford's going for, our defense is fine. We'll take points and make it a 4-point game.
I don't know. I just didn't like the way that whole thing unfolded.
You're not wrong. I just... trying to put my shoe into his brain or whatever I'm trying to say there. Think about what he would do, I guess. So, but close loss, like, are you disappointed with an 8-point loss? Or disappointed because they had chances to win this game?
More of the latter.
Okay. Yes, yeah, because they had...
I did pick Fresno State to cover, after all.
Yeah, you did. Good job. All right, that's our last game of the weekend. Anything else we need to add real quick? Are we good to go, you think?
I think we are all set.
All right, look for our power poll, which apparently has been controversial on Twitter. And also... people love the GIF reaction on Sunday. We had a ton of people replying, retweeting. We'll do that every Sunday morning, so be back for that, to be happy or sad. And mwwire.com is our website. We had, announcement, Matt. New site record on Saturday.
Awesome.
Week 1, boom. Sorry, Eli Boettger. We beat out basketball. Suck it.
Yeah, and Nevada beat the Eli Boettger Hex.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Him and his Purdue, he's trying to talk football like, tickle hoops, but it's okay. He's doing stuff for Sporting News at the time being, so good luck on that and have a good time. But we had some good banter back and forth, everybody. So, yeah, check out the website. Check out MWCYR on Twitter. Power poll. All sorts of stuff coming out this week. Good start to the first week of the season for us. And we'll be back sometime Wednesday to preview week 2. Until then, enjoy your week and get ready for next Saturday.